This week, after a less than perfect childhood, Mark turns things around and is living right. He finds his faith, lives his religion, and checks all the right boxes. But when his 15-year marriage comes to an abrupt end, Mark, well, let's just say the more things change, the more they stay the same. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce.
I'm a failure as a husband. I'm a failure as a man.
It's just, I'm beautiful and I'm bright and I deserve better.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good. Oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips. Oh.
Welcome to My Crazy Divorce, everyone. I'm your host, Tom Milligan. I had such a great time doing this week's show. I mean, I had a blast recording. I've become close friends with a lot of our past guests, but Mark and I really hit it off. Maybe it's because without actually knowing each other, we've lived parallel lives. I mean, let's see. We're both ex-Mormons. We both served missions for the church. We both got married way too fast and way too young. We've both divorced twice. We've both have the utmost respect for our first wives and, well, you'll just have to listen to understand how we both feel about our second wives. Now, before we get to this week's crazy story, I have to do just a little housekeeping. As always, remember that I'm not an attorney or a therapist, so nothing on this show should ever be mistaken as legal or therapeutic advice. Please seek out the appropriate professional if you need that type of support. Now, if you're already a fan of the show, you know that it's not always the divorce that's crazy. That's because crazy comes in many forms and can happen at any time. This week's divorces take about 2 minutes of the show. The rest is all the crazy shit before, between, and after. So, if you've been divorced and have a crazy divorce story you'd like to share on our show, please visit mycrazydivorce.com and click on the Apply to be a Guest button. It only takes a minute to apply, and I would love to hear from you. Now, most of you are listening on a podcast app, which is awesome, and thank you for listening. But did you know you can watch the show on YouTube? The easiest way to find the show is to visit mycrazydivorce.com and click on the YouTube link on the left side of the page. All right. Are you ready to find out what happens when religion, law enforcement, wanton debauchery, and repeated stupidity combine to create muscle memory? Good. Let's meet Mark.
Mark, thank you so much for being here. I'm excited to hear this story today.
It's a pleasure. I'm excited to talk about it.
All right. So just so everybody understands this, I met Mark on TikTok, as I've met a lot of our guests actually on TikTok. And he is also what I like to call a recovering Mormon. And so we're going to be talking a lot about religion is going to play a big part in this one, I think. And we were just talking before we started recording that there's quite a bit of similarities here. So I think this is going to be a fun one. Well, let's get started. Your TikTok handle is Canuck something, isn't it?
Yeah, so Canuck Mark, single dad ex-mo is my name, but Canuck Mark because I was born in Canada.
Okay. So we have a Canadian. I think you're our second Canadian.
Yes, you had that other Canadian on, yep.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, everybody, Mark, when we met on TikTok, you went ahead and just binged every episode of the podcast. So if nothing else, we've raised our listenership. All right. So let's jump into this then. And so you were born in Canada. Let's hear the growing up story.
Okay. A lot that'll come into my story is going to be a lot of faith-based stuff because that's going to be a big part of it. So with that, I was born in Canada to what I'd call semi-active or less active parents. My dad passed away when I was 3. I don't have really any memory of him. I was too young. And so I vaguely remember going to church periodically with my mom and my 2 older sisters. At about the age of 5, that's when my mom got with the man I called my stepdad. Now, they never officially married. It was just kind of a common law marriage, but that's the man.
Not a very Mormon thing to do.
Yeah, that's the man who raised me. He too came from a LDS background, but wasn't active himself. And so I'd say I was kind of raised with generic Christian values, but we never really went to church. I don't ever remember all of us going to church, but you know, we do family prayers for dinner at big dinners. But yeah, just generic Christian values. I knew I was Mormon, but I couldn't tell you the first thing what my religion was about.
Interesting. Hey, by the way, before we get going any further, I want to make sure that people who are listening, you just used the first Mormon term. And that's okay. I just want to make sure we explain these things. You said inactive or less active. In the Mormon church, an inactive member is someone who just doesn't go, but they've sometime in the last 20 years or so, they decided to call it less active. It's not that his parents were just blobs of flesh. They were active in other parts of their lives, but not active in the Mormon church. So.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for catching me on that, Tom. And you'll have to do that quite a bit. I'll have to be mindful of that, especially when I get talking to another recovering Mormon. It's so easy to flow in and out of those terms that we're used to using that sometimes I forget that we're speaking to an audience who may have no idea.
Exactly. So we'll probably fill out our Mormon bingo cards today.
There we go. Yeah. So anyway, lived there, the city I lived in Alberta, where the vast majority of Mormons in Canada are. I lived in Edmonton. About the age of 14, we moved down to Calgary. That move was rough on me. That's a teenager in the prime of their formative years, middle school. And my mom and dad weren't doing too well in their relationship. I knew that. No big fights or anything like that. I just think they had very different goals that they wanted. And it was hard for me in this new area. And I started falling into kind of the bad crowd, one could say. Not knocking off liquor stores or anything, but just that juvenile partying, I guess, would be the best way to put it. I went down to, came here to Utah to visit my aunt and uncle, who I visited every year. My mom and my uncle, who are brother and sister, always very close. And they're very active Mormons, meaning that they go all the time. They live the Mormon lifestyle in every way you could think of. And my uncle invited me along on a youth camp out, which I'm sure you remember those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But this was a really great group of guys, and they were fantastic. I really clicked with a lot of them. And then I just had all kinds of questions about my own religion, really knowing nothing. So they threw out the suggestion. They're like, how about you live with us for a year? Live down here for a year, go to school, start coming to church with us. You know, I had a great relationship with my mom and dad, but I knew there was problems back home. They were both struggling. It was probably a good thing for me. And so they agreed. And I lived in Utah, and 1 year turned into the rest. And I became essentially what we like to call the true believing Mormon, the TBM, as I will say. But yes, I was that active Mormon youth. I took to it like white on rice. And I really did enjoy it. It was good for me at that time. It was a great thing.
Yeah. So your youth group there, your camp out, it was probably, they call it young men's, but I think it's kind of the crossover between young men's and Boy Scouts. So yeah, that I'll tell you what, that I grew up in a very, I don't know what the right word is, active congregation or ward with active Boy Scouts and young men's. And that was the part about the church experience that kept me going.
Yeah.
So I totally understand why that would hook you, so to speak, and get you thinking about it. So, all right. So you're growing up, just out of curiosity, which high school did you go to?
I went to Alta High in Sandy. Yep.
Okay. Tell me about your high school years, though. Were you like the jock? Were you the thug, the goth? Who were you?
So, and this will come into the story later. I did a complete 180 in all senses. Growing up in Canada, I was a very strong personality and still am to this day. When I moved to Utah, I have the culture shock of, although there's many similarities between Canadian and American culture, there are nuance differences. And so I'm dealing with the culture shock. I'm brand new to this area. I'm coming from a totally different background. I grew up very blue collar up in Canada. My parents did well, but here I am living on the, for those who don't know, the Salt Lake area, southeast bench of the Salt Lake Valley in the 90s. This is very high end. Yeah, that's very wealthy and very Mormon, might I add. Mm-hmm. And so lots of cultural adjustments. So I was very quiet my first couple years in high school. I had a group of friends, but I generally was more reserved and quiet until my senior year.
Wow. Okay. But then what happened in your senior year? You just kind of came out?
Yeah, feeling a lot more comfortable. My friend group had grown quite a bit. And I would call myself kind of that jack of all trades. Definitely more of a jock. I played a lot of sports. but I would hang out with anybody, had friends in every circle, listened to all genres of music, and I really did enjoy my high school experience. I had a good life here. I definitely will credit my aunt and uncle, which, side point to that, I've lived here for so long, I will refer to my aunt and uncle as mom and dad. And I also have a mom and dad in Canada, so it can sound very confusing. And if I step up on or mess up on that, you may hear me say Utah mom or Canada mom. You'd think I grew up with a group of polygamists.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So, all right, let's talk about your aunt and uncle for just a second, because I'm fascinated. Those who've listened to the show know I'm fascinated by religion, even though I don't buy into it anymore.
Yeah.
But your mom, your Canada mom, obviously she did not adhere to the teachings of the Mormon Church, the LDS religion, because she was living with a guy.
Correct.
Your aunt and uncle, your Utah mom and dad, they clearly adhered and helped you to get into the church.
Yes.
How did your uncle and your mom are brother and sister, right? Is that what you said?
Yes. Yep.
How do you know how it is that he became and remained active and she didn't?
Yeah. So they grew up very similar to how I grew up, semi-active, as we just said. They'd go every now and again. He grew up as a jock as well. Kind of had, when he was in college, playing hockey. Typical Canadian. Had that, I guess one may call it that come to Jesus moment where you realize you got to do more with your life. And he up and decided he's going to go on a mission. And this was back in the 70s when missionary standards, for those who don't know, an LDS mission where you go serve for 2 years at the church's behest at a place that you have no say over.
Yeah, but you get to pay for it.
You get to pay for it, all right. Yep, yep. Glad to know their $300 billion is... Anyway, yeah, I'll have these smart-ass snarky comments here and there.
Oh, I love them.
But yep, so that's what happened with him. He went on a mission. When he came home, he ended up marrying a girl from California who grew up very Mormon, and that's their story. And so they lived in California. She went to BYU. Yep. And he was just down in Utah. He actually ended up going to the University of Utah, but yep, they met, they married, lived in California for years, and then ended up moving out to Utah actually just the year before I moved in with them.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep.
All right. So, and I know you talked about it before, but I want to make sure we get it out there. How many siblings do you have?
So I have two sisters up in Canada, both older. Here in Utah, I am one of eight. So all of my cousins here refer to me as a brother. I refer to them as siblings. My aunt and uncle had four of their own. Then I came into the picture and I would have been the oldest of that group. And then they adopted three more. And so they had to become my legal guardian, which is essentially the same process as adoption, only I wasn't up for adoption. Right. So yeah, I was here in Utah. I'm the oldest of eight. Back in Canada, I'm the youngest of three.
What a weird way to look at it.
Right, right. And yet really I'm not, cool. Yeah, never grew up in a polygamous sect, I promise. I know it sounds like it, but yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, for those who are listening, Mormons are not polygamists.
No, no.
Despite what the media likes to portray.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you keep saying that, because you're right. The confusion could be pretty real.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got active in the church.
Yes.
And you served a mission.
I did. Yep. I went to the Philippines, and like yourself, I loved my mission. I really did. It was great. The skills you learn. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of use for speaking Filipino in Utah, but I really loved the experience of just the things you learn going to a third world country. Because for those who don't know, when you're a missionary in a third world country, you are living in those communities. You're not living in some huge house up the hill. You are living in a home within the communities like any missionary in America. And so you become part of that culture.
Yeah. Just the tallest, whitest part of that culture.
Right. Yep.
So just out of curiosity, which part of the Philippines were you in?
So I would have been in the northeast part. The name of the mission was the Baguio Mission, but it covers the northeast part of the Philippines.
I've been there, actually.
Oh, okay.
I've spent many months in the Philippines, anywhere there's a call center. So,
yeah, and there's plenty of them there.
Yeah, obviously most of the time in Manila, but I went down to Cebu and Iloilo and Baguio.
Baguio was where I was at. And You'll see that a lot because they actually do claim English as a national language. Yep. And they speak it relatively well, as I'm sure you experienced. So yeah, there's lots of American connections there. American culture is very prevalent there in many aspects.
Yep. Yep. When I moved from Utah, I decided I never wanted to see snow again. And so I was either moving to Florida, Mexico, or the Philippines. Those were literally my three choices.
Yep.
And I decided to stay in the States for this round of moving. Okay. All right. So you went on a mission, enjoyed it, loved it. Just again, like me, but you got home and at some point you meet Kylie. How did that happen?
So Kylie is my best friend's little sister. Yeah. So almost the girl next door. So I knew her from the moment I moved to Utah. Now, she was always just my best friend's little sister growing up. But when I came home, she was 18 years old. And my best friend was still on his mission. I was so used to hanging out at their house, and their family gave me my first job when I came home. So I was working for their family and spending lots of time with Kylie. And it just kind of grew from there.
There you go. Yeah. When I left, my little sister, I think, was 17. And then when I got home, all of her friends were not little girls anymore. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yep.
I was only 21. You were 21. I mean, it's not like I was a true pedophile or anything.
As we know in Mormon culture, once you hit that magic age of 18 as a female, time to get married.
Time's a wasting.
Yep.
Those eggs aren't going to last forever. Yeah.
And so we took said advice within the religious context there, and we were married. Let's see. I got home from my mission in August. We were married by March. So March 2000. Yep. So we maybe dated. Now, again, like I said, we knew each other really well. Actual dating, we started, I think we went on our first date. I want to say it was October of 99. And then I proposed just after Christmas because we had already talked about it and everything. And then we were married by March of 2000.
Oh my gosh.
And that's what we call a Mormon home run there, boys.
Were you married in the temple?
Yes, I was. Yeah. We did the temple marriage up in Bountiful.
Oh, I was raised in Bountiful. I grew up about, I don't know, less than a mile from the temple.
Well,
wow. That is absolutely hilarious. I will say, my first marriage, it was a similar story. We were really good friends at work. We met at work. We were really good friends. In fact, I set her up with a couple of my buddies and we would double date and stuff like that. I mean, it was truly just a friendship.
And
then I remember one day I just saw her at work and I went, she's kind of cute. And I had never even thought about it before.
Yeah.
And we decided to go and we went and saw a movie, I think. We went Dutch. I don't know if that's a Utah term, but we each paid for our own tickets and stuff. And the next day, we decided to get married.
Jesus. I laugh only because it's so common. It's so common.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
Yeah.
And we were married less than 5 months later. So
yep.
It's a very Mormon thing to do. And I think I was 24 when we got married.
Yeah.
An amicable divorce, sometimes referred to as uncontested or collaborative divorce, has been proven to provide better outcomes for everyone involved. I'll share the easiest way you can accomplish a collaborative divorce by using ourdivorce.com. But first, you'll want to understand why it's so important. Reason number one, a collaborative divorce is better: an amicable divorce costs a lot less. The average cost of a divorce in the U.S. is over $15,000, primarily in attorney's fees. With ourdivorce.com, it only costs $299, and payment isn't required until you print your final documents. Reason number two why a collaborative divorce is better: an amicable divorce is faster. A contested divorce takes an average of 11 months to go through the court system. With ourdivorce.com, it can take as little as a couple of hours, as quickly as both parties can agree and work through our simple three-step process. Reason number three, a collaborative divorce is better. A collaborative divorce is just easier. When you involve angry people and a bunch of lawyers, it always gets complicated. With OurDivorce.com, as long as you and your spouse can commit to being civil and work through the process, there doesn't have to be fighting or a bunch of legal paperwork and confusion going back and forth between lawyers. Reason number four, a collaborative divorce is better. An uncontested divorce gives you more control rather than leaving decision to the lawyers or a judge. With OurDivorce.com, you're in full control of directing the outcomes that are best for both parties, and especially any children. Reason number five, a collaborative divorce is better. After an amicable divorce, you have the ability to focus on your needs and the needs of the children, rather than focusing on a broken relationship with your ex-spouse. This means less stress on you and your children. At OurDivorce.com, we always hope that couples can remain married. But when that isn't possible, we give you the tools to have an amicable, collaborative, and uncontested divorce so that you can maintain control while working through the process more quickly. Just go to OurDivorce.com to learn more or to get started today.
Wow. Okay, so you guys get married. We're not going to talk a lot about the marriage other than I know you had a bunch of kids. And give us the quick and dirty rundown of what happened in that marriage.
Going back to kind of the Mormon religious context here, within Mormonism, and I'm obviously not explaining this to you, but to any other listener, sexual sins are on the big no-no spectrum. I mean, you have murder, then you have sexual sins. And sexual sins, just to clarify for people, range from premarital sex, you know, infidelity to, there you go, masturbation and porn. I, like any other man or human being for that matter, yes, I dabbled into porn and had pretty much been masturbating since every other guy, I don't know, since 12. And so that came to light at one point in our marriage, which that in a Mormon context is earth shattering. I mean, that I've known, unfortunately, many divorces have happened just from that alone. We did not get divorced when this first came out, but I was taken through the sexual shame ringer. You're this horrible person. You're basically a pariah. And I was forced, the Mormon Church has 12-step recovery groups for what they call porn addicts. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a real thing as porn addiction. Yeah. I wasn't it. I don't know. Maybe I'm still living in denial. But no, I was, and that's kind of where my shelf, and when I say my shelf, we talk about, that's a common term in a post-Mormon world of talking about how your shelf starts to bend and crack as all these little things are put on it, and one day it breaks. Well, mine started to bend and crack with the sexual shaming, because as I met more guys, because I'm one of those that, hey, once the cat's out of the bag, I'm going to talk to everybody about it, which I did. And without fail, every man I would talk to would admit to, okay, yeah, I did that. They'd be all sheepish about it, but they'd admit to it. And I quickly realized, all right, if this is ubiquitous, then perhaps the Mormon church isn't handling human sexuality right.
So that was the first book on your bookshelf, right?
That was the first book. And then, as you well know, and anybody who was in a high-demand religion, it only takes the one crack. And then once you allow yourself to be able to question the church in any way, more books start getting put on that shelf really fast.
Yeah. You know what mine was, by the way?
What's that?
I remember sitting there one day and I asked myself, does God really care what brand of underwear I am wearing?
As long as it's Beehive approved.
Exactly. As long as the church makes money on it.
Right, right. Cared
about it. But yeah, that was the first book on my shelf, so to speak.
So. Yep. And so we stayed together, went through maybe a good 6 months of hell and sleeping on the couch. And
that's going to help.
Yep. Yeah, that's going to help. But we, I guess, fixed it, so to say. Now, the other thing that happened during this time is I became a police officer. And here's one thing where I'll definitely own my part. When I became a police officer, that tapped into that personality that I had repressed that I used to be in Canada. Like I said, I became the good Mormon boy who was the clean-cut, soft-spoken guy. But that wasn't me. That wasn't me. The minute I become a police officer, and I was a police officer in Dallas, Texas. It was a big city, and I worked the ghettos of Dallas. And so soft-spoken has no place there. You better be able to handle your shit. And again, when that personality emerged, I'm like, yes, this is me. And so that is one thing I'll definitely own on my part. I became a different person.
Okay, so you changed.
I changed for sure.
Yep. A different person than she married. Yeah. Now, by the way, I saw a really great TikTok the other day where somebody said, it was a woman saying that her husband was upset that she had changed in their marriage. And she goes, isn't that kind of the point? Aren't we supposed to change?
Now, right?
I don't think she meant the way you're talking about. Yeah. Sounds like you just went from I don't want to say Jekyll and Hyde, but different, totally different person.
Yep. And so, and I can definitely admit from Kylie's perspective, she's seeing my husband's become this different person, and now he's starting to question things with the church, and that's going to cause a divide.
And he's a porn addict.
Yeah, right. He's a recovering porn addict at that point. So we end up moving back to Utah. That was kind of always the plan. We didn't move back because of that for any reason. Loved Texas, but we didn't have any family down there. And we knew we wanted to come back to Utah before our oldest child started junior high. And so we did. We moved back to Utah. She gets a job. She was a teacher. I get a job with a police agency up here. And we bring the whole crew, five kids, dog, cat, you name it, all back up to Utah and settle into our nice Mormon Utah life.
So how long have you been married at this point?
So at this point, we've been married about 12 years. Yeah.
So five kids. 12 years. And how long were you married before you had five kids?
First kid was born in 2001. We had three really close together, one in 2001, one in 03, one in 04. We had a four-year gap, and then we had our next two. And so when we moved up to Utah, our youngest was just 1 year old, a little past her first birthday, and the oldest was getting ready to go into middle school.
Yeah. By the way, and for those who aren't familiar, I'm going to tell you right now, what we're hearing, anybody that's hearing this going, oh my gosh, how could you have that many kids? This is completely normal.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. There's nothing abnormal or atypical about this in Utah. So, yep. Or in the Mormon culture.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Cause it's anywhere within the Mormon culture, particularly heavy in Utah.
Yeah. Get home from your mission, graduate. So if you're a man, go on a mission and get married. If you're a girl, graduate from high school and get married. And whatever you do, start having kids.
Yep. Check those boxes. Check those boxes. God is scoring it. We know. Yep. So back in Utah, my faith crisis just grows because now I'm having a hard time with Utah Mormon culture. Even though I'd grown up in it, I just spent the past 8 years in Texas, and now I'm having a hard time with Utah Mormon culture. And for those who don't know, Utah Mormon culture, I call it the Saudi Arabia of Mormonism.
Yeah. And I call them Shiite Mormons.
Yeah. Like you find, living in Florida, you'll find a Mormon and maybe have no idea. You'll know in Utah if they're Mormon because we'll tell you. And it just more questions I had with the church. And this, of course, to make a long story short, and then I relapse as a porn addict. This time it's too much for her. And
you bought another Cosmo.
Yeah. So I end up getting sent to another porn addiction group, which again, now I'm kind of pissed off because I know I'm not a porn addict. I know I'm normal. I'm a porn addict in a Mormon context, which I already have established in my own mind is not a healthy context when it comes to human sexuality. So the gap just grows between us. And so that's why when the divorce happened, and I'm just kind of referring to my guideline here, it happened fast. Now, I think with Kylie, she was, I think, reaching out to an ex, and this will come into play, and kind of establishing a relationship there. But from the time she said, I want to get divorced, 10 weeks. Yep. So 10 weeks from the time she said there's a problem until divorce. I'm sorry. Let me reclarify that. So from the time she said there's a problem, I can't do this, to I want to get a divorce was 10 weeks.
Wait a minute. So not from when you, I'm doing air quotes around relapsed.
Right.
But from when she said your relapse is a problem.
Correct. Yep. So, yep. When she said your relapse was a problem. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Because I probably went to therapy for a good year before it was too much for her. Now, she was going to this therapy group as well. And there was a specific incident at that therapy group with the women that I think brought this on.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh because, like you said, porn addiction is real.
For some people. Yeah.
Right.
I wasn't one.
Right. But I just have to ask.
Yeah.
You're going to therapy. Is this group therapy?
So it's group, and then it breaks off to the men have their group, the women have their group, and they meet on separate days. And then you meet together as a couple on one day. We're talking 3 nights a week that we're going to this goddamn place and paying them money to go here on the recommendation of the church.
Is it LDS Social Services?
No, this is an LDS. It's much more cynical here. I wish it was just LDS Social Services. I could justify that stupidity. This is licensed LCSWs, professional therapists who have gotten their degree, been through schooling, but they teach these porn addiction recovery groups through their own private practices, but they're based off an alcohol addiction thing, yeah. Which, as I learn more about addiction, the two have, we're talking night and day here, yeah. But they suspend the best practices of therapy for the replacement of Mormon theology. And It did a lot of damage. I did learn some good things from it about myself. But anyway, as Kylie is going through her group in her victim recovery, yes, they literally referred to her, yes, as like they would compare her to a victim of domestic violence because her husband looked at porn and touched Captain Winky.
All right. So I'm going to take a step back here because I can just feel people getting angry at both of us right now. And so I'm going to say once again, we both acknowledge that porn addiction is real. I'm also going to acknowledge that when a man looks at porn, it probably isn't going to help his marriage. His wife isn't going to feel better about herself. I get it. I understand that.
Yeah.
But if a man looks at a pretty woman, that does not mean he doesn't love his wife.
Correct.
Whether she's clothed or not. Now, if he spends his whole life obsessing about said pretty woman and starts doing something about it, then I get it. But I mean, if you remember, I can't remember the name of the episode, but it's with my former girlfriend, Jenny,
yes.
Up in Idaho.
Yes.
Her ex, he was addicted to porn because he was stealing porn from his clients' houses to get access to it and was hiding it around the house. This is in the land before the internet. That's addiction.
Yes.
When you have to do that.
Yeah.
But just looking at it from time to time, it's not addiction.
Yeah. I take full responsibility. As I said, I had changed as a person, and I very much recognize that from Kylie's standpoint, that was a betrayal of our marriage contract. Mm-hmm. Regardless of how silly and unrealistic it is from her standpoint, I had betrayed the marriage contract, the marriage understanding that we had. And I recognize that and I own that. And if I sound like I'm belittling it, as you just mentioned, Tom, it is the culture of a high demand religion that I'm referring to as the ridiculous part.
Yeah. By the way, you brought up alcoholism just a minute ago, and I'm going to use that as the analogy. If someone drinks a beer, they are not an alcoholic. In fact, if they drink a beer every day, they are not an alcoholic.
Perfect analogy. Yep.
It takes a lot more to become an addict to something. And so I think that we sometimes throw the word addiction around, and it's overused, I think.
Yes. Is what I'm saying. Yeah. No, I'm with you. So thank you for clarifying that, because I can get a little carried away of poking fun at it to where I want to make sure I'm not mitigating anybody's hurt or betrayal that they may have experienced with a spouse that was an addict,
right.
Was going to chat rooms, was having affairs.
Right. Yep, exactly. Okay. So you guys have I don't want to say a simple divorce, but if it only took 10 weeks.
It was fully stipulated. Yep.
Yeah. Amicable, cooperative, compromise.
Yes. So there was definitely some hardship with that and navigating a post-divorce, as we'll often learn and most people probably know. That's usually where a lot of the trauma comes in, is post-divorce. Uh-huh. So I immediately start looking for another wife. And I'll say that, looking for another wife. I wasn't looking to date. I was looking for another wife. But I'm one foot in, one foot out with Mormonism. And it gets interesting here. So I get on a Mormon dating site. And it's funny because I recall my profile back then. And I made it very clear that, hey, if you're looking for Peter priesthood to take you to the temple, I'm not your guy. I'm one foot in, one foot out. And based on that level of honesty, I had all kinds of women liking my profile.
Really?
Yeah. And it just showed kind of almost another parallel of this duality that people have living in these high demand religions, where, as I learned with the porn and masturbation, all these men were doing it. They just lied about it to keep up with images. I was honest with it and kind of got dragged through the mud through it. And so here I am seeing it on all these women who are saying that's what they're looking for, but yet they're liking my profile.
You know the old joke, right? You know how to keep a Mormon from drinking your beer?
How's that?
Invite two of them.
I laugh because that is so true.
It's, it really is.
You can do a lot of powerful things with shame.
Oh, yeah. That's why when you see Mormon missionaries, there's always two of them.
Always two. Always two. Yep. So this is where I meet Lori. We'll refer to wife number two as Lori. And so I meet her in this Mormon dating site, and she is of kind of the same mindset I am. She's Mormon
kind of
still.
In and out.
She's pretty nuanced, and she has her doubts as well.
So just for context, when is this? Let's get some time frame.
So okay. Marriage ends late 2015 to early 2016, maybe single for 3 to 6 months tops, maybe not even that long. I'm trying to remember. And then Lori and I meet.
Okay. And so, and that, she wasn't your first date either. So you started dating pretty darn quick.
Pretty darn quick. Yeah. But there wasn't a lot of dates. There was a few. But I was ready to put that quarter back in the jukebox and hit repeat.
Check those boxes.
Yeah, yeah. And even though I'm questioning Mormonism, as you well know, there's so many things that just become ingrained into your daily process, because a high demand religion, it defines every aspect of your life, what career you're going to do, what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, everything. So I would just call it muscle memory. I'm going into muscle memory here and going back into my Mormon training for date quick, get married, find the yep. one. There we go.
Yeah. I think, you know what? I never even thought about that. I literally, until this very minute, I never even thought about that, that when I got divorced basically 3 years ago right now, I immediately started dating and I was out there looking. And it, like you said, I wasn't looking for a girlfriend or a date. I was looking for a wife.
Yep.
And I never even thought about being muscle memory. And even though I'd been away from the church at that point for, what, 5, 6, 7 years, that's genius.
Yep. Especially when it scratches an area that maybe you haven't explored yet. You're going to go back to your training. And so Lori and I do that. This was her second marriage as well. Her first one was very rough. She was married to a man who was a drug addict, suffered from a lot of mental health issues as well, and was very emotionally and mentally abusive to her, never physically. And this will come into play later. Wow. So Lori and I, we were married November 2016.
So you've now married this woman. She has a couple of kids. She had a horrible first marriage experience. How long had she been divorced, by the way, when you guys met?
She had been divorced, officially divorced, only about 6 months, but that was a longer divorce process. So they had been apart, separated for about 2 years.
Okay. But she was still muscle memory in it too. She sounds to me like she was just ready to jump right back on that horse.
And she had only, she had moved in with her mom, so she never lived alone. She was living with her mom from that divorce to her mom's house. And then, yeah.
So let's learn about Lori. Where is she from?
So she's also from here in Utah, from same city, Sandy. Went to a different high school than me. We never knew each other back then. But yeah, she grew up here in Utah in a much more active Mormon lifestyle. Her parents were divorced too when she was a teenager, but that didn't seem to really rattle her Mormon world too much.
What about her siblings? Is her whole family pretty active in the church?
She has two older brothers, and they have both. One is very anti-Mormon, and the other is just what we'd call another fun Utah term, a Jack Mormon. In other words, mm-hmm. someone who believes everything about the church, but doesn't live the lifestyle in any way.
Right. And so therefore feels guilty all the time.
Yes. Yep.
Got it. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you found this, but it seems to me that Mormonism is a lot like politics right now. It's very polarizing. You're either 100% Mormon or you are anti-Mormon. There's not a lot of Jack Mormon middle ground anymore.
No, very few. And a lot of that is the Mormon church themselves that kind of presents that option, which is unfortunate because there's many beautiful aspects about the Mormon faith that I very much and value those lessons, but as well as I do, Tom, listening to twice a year in Mormonism, there's what's called the General Conference where our top ecclesiastical leaders speak. And I mean, there's talks as far back as we can remember where it is all or nothing,
yep.
All or nothing.
Yeah. And I just remember growing up just feeling so guilty that I wouldn't pray morning, noon, and night, that I didn't read my scriptures every single day. But I mean, I was here's a Mormon term. I was a word of wisdom virgin until I was 48 years old. Yeah. I did not have a taste of alcohol until I was 48 years old. I mean, and you know what? That's probably a good thing because if I had liked it as a teenager, I'd probably be living in the gutter or dead right now. But anyway, so Lori grows up in Utah, divorced parents. When did they divorce, did you say, when she was a teenager?
She was, her early teens, I want to say like 13, 14-ish.
And you know, it's an interesting thing. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but you moved to Utah or moved to Calgary when you were 14. Probably the worst time in the world to go through such a change. And that's about the worst time for a young girl, I think, or a young boy either. But for parents to get divorced, do it when they're younger or older.
Yep.
But 14,
that's a tough one. Yeah. I think that set some things into motion for Lori. Not that I'm trying to psychoanalyze her here, but just based on my own observations that would come into play in her midlife.
Okay. And by the way, is Lori your same age or?
She's 4 years younger than me. So relatively close, pretty typical within marriage spectrum.
Yeah. Once you get past 23 or 24, who cares?
Right. Who gives a damn at that point?
Yeah. But at the same time, by the way, all you guys out there that are 50 and trying to date 20-year-olds, kind of get over that. That's kind of gross.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned in my dating life that anybody under the age of 40 almost bugged me.
Yeah, I just have a 10-year rule. I got to be either 10 years, within 10 years, either way of me. So right now it's 44 to 64.
Yep.
So you guys, you meet, you get married in October of 2016, I believe.
Yes. Yep. November. Yep.
November. Okay. So Thanksgiving wedding time. It's 2016, coming up on your 6th anniversary right now. Congratulations.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
You're all laughing. Uh-huh. All right. So let's find out how this all went out. So she had two kids. You had five kids. Let's talk about this marriage. How did it go?
So her two kids were the same age as my two youngest. In fact, both boy and a girl, same age as my youngest boy and girl. So the four of them became just the best of friends. My three older kids were teenagers, and so they were pretty low maintenance at that point. I live within 5 miles of their mother, in fact, more like 3 miles. So they would freely go back and forth between homes. And it was seven kids, but really it was four that she had to deal with, which was tough for her. But as far as the marriage went, it was awesome. It was awesome. It really was. I thought I'd just hit it out of the park with this one. As her and I began our marriage, we kind of went through our faith deconstruction with Mormonism together. And so we both came to, we'd listen to these podcasts, we'd read things, and I thought, it's like reverse scripture study where they say those who pray together, stay together. Maybe those who deconstruct together, stay together. But it was great for us. And we really grew well as a couple and had these deep talks. And I was just madly in love with this woman. She just really did it for me on every way. Now, she also shared a very similar personality to Kylie, which one would think I should have seen as a red flag, but I didn't, because like I said, I was just in that get married again, and I went with what I knew and what was comfortable and that muscle memory.
Well, not only that, but you know, I don't certainly know the whole story between you and Kylie, but it sounds to me, at least what we've heard today, that your divorce from Kylie wasn't a personality conflict. It was a belief or a dogmatic
very difference. Much.
Whereas you and Lori had the personalities that meshed, but also a belief system that meshed.
Yes. Yep. So one would think everything that is there. Where I'd start saying perhaps some of those differences start coming into play is when I jump into something, I really jump into it. I'm a strong type A personality. I'll talk to people and I'm able to process things perhaps a little quicker than somebody else. Kylie, or both Lori and Kylie, had that similar personality of they're going to keep it in and really mull it over for a long time before they start addressing things. So my deconstruction process with Mormonism and with anything was perhaps a lot quicker than Lori's would be, but we were never not on the same page. We were spot on with everything. And one thing I know you like to ask, which this was a huge thing, the sex life of Lori was phenomenal. With Kylie, it was Kylie, that woman was a camel. She could go months, months.
Okay. Again, we have led such parallel lives. It's almost scary.
Right, right. And as we were talking before, just the circle is small in the kingdom that is Mormonism.
Yeah, without naming names, I will say that one of the things Mark and I were talking about before we started is when I found out that he's a police officer in a particular city in Utah, I asked if he knew somebody that's very close to me, and he said, not only do I know this person, but I think I've arrested or taken him in.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, I had enforcement opportunities to engage with his wisdom.
Enforcement opportunities. That's a wonderful way to put it. So let me ask this, though, about your deconstruction. You and Lori meet on, I assume it's like LDSSingles.com or something like that.
Yes, yeah.
And anybody out there, LDS is the abbreviation for Mormonism, stands for Latter-day Saints. And so you guys meet on this, despite the fact that you're both questioning things when you meet. You say your deconstruction happened more quickly than hers. Was yours further along when you met?
I think so. I think I had, from an academic standpoint, had delved into more issues than her. Hers were more emotional, but that I've been in the post-Mormon community for long enough now. That's very common. Usually it's more social issues and emotional issues that will resonate with women as to what may lead them out. Whereas with men, and I'm certainly not painting this for everybody, just a generalization, yeah. Whereas men, it will generally be more academic issues, historical issues. And is what you say, is it true or is it not true? Whether it feels good or not is irrelevant.
Yeah. I know that when my ex Trinity and I left the church, for me, it was all, like you say, it was logic and academics. And I think a lot of it was for her because she's a very logical person as well. But in the months after, she would often talk about how much she missed the social aspect. I mean, I had my neighborhood, and my neighborhood buddies were my neighborhood buddies, not because we went to church together, but because we lived next door to
the house. Yep.
So, but it wasn't the same. So that's an interesting observation. So you're married, you're having a great sex life. You've working together. You've deconstructed your belief system to the point where you're, I don't want to say anti-Mormon or anything, but you're no longer a practicing Mormon, and neither is she.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I was probably a little more antagonistic towards the church than she was at this point. I won't say anti-Mormon, though, because again, there's many beautiful aspects about it that I still love to this day. But I was a little more antagonistic, and I think that's just my personality type coming more, especially as being a cop. I'm going to challenge things much more than she did. But like I said, it never caused issues with us. That was just how I dealt with it more. I would really dive into podcasts a lot more and listen to things, and she would just be like, why do you care if we're out? And I'm like, it's just, I went into it on a logical level. I'm going to go out of it on a logical level. And to this day, I still listen to a lot of post-Mormon podcasts. And again, I think it just kind of, it's almost more for pleasure now.
Yeah.
I enjoy history.
So I will tell you, we talk about the first book on the shelf. Do you know what your last book was that finally broke it?
Oh, so it all started with temple stuff for me. And then when I dug into temple stuff and learn of masonry, Masonic traditions. And then when I started digging into Joseph Smith, I think it was not just the polygamy, but as I really learned more about the polygamy, teenage girls, and then I learned the term polyandry, which I had never heard, realizing that 11 of Joseph Smith's wives were polyamorous marriages, which this is going to become ironic in a bit.
I will say, you know, the one that broke mine was the translation process.
Oh, yes. I learned about that after.
Yeah.
Yep.
For me, it's, wait a minute. My entire life, I was taught that he looked through these glasses. And you know what? As magical as that might seem, that's actually almost believable, right? I mean, you can look at Google Glass and things like that. You can kind of believe that you can look at something and it would translate it for you.
Yeah.
But to say that he found a rock on his farm and chucked it in a hat, stuck his face in a hat, and that's where he saw the words?
Yeah, who would have thought that the most accurate tellers of Mormon history were South Park?
Right. That's exactly right. And here's the question. And I'm not trying to bash Mormonism because, quite frankly, if you want to be a Mormon, have a great time. Don't care.
Yep.
But here's the question. If he was looking in his hat, why were the plates necessary at all?
Yeah. And you come to find out later that the plates weren't even in the room most of the time.
Right.
So he's almost doing this through osmosis or ESP.
Bluetooth.
Yeah, blue rock at least.
There you go. So that was the book that broke my shelf. It was when that all came out, that was true.
Yep.
When I first heard about it, I'm like, no, that's not real. Oh, yeah, it's real. And the church acknowledges that it's real. I went, so you've been lying to me.
Yep. That was the big thing for me as well, because everything I'd read, I would say, okay, I'm not going to, because I would venture out into the academic community and I'd read something that somebody would claim or watch a video. And be like, I have to go search it. And without fail, I would find something on LDS.org, the church's website at the time, or through BYU.edu, I would find these talks. And I'd be like, Jesus Christ, it's right here.
Yeah, it's a bizarre thing. Anyway, this is not an anti-Mormon episode. I apologize, everybody, but it's fascinating to get two ex-Mormons together to understand what got us to this point.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So where were we in the marriage part of this? So you and Corey are happily married, seemingly. Yep. Didn't stay that way because we're on a show about your divorce. So let's start talking about the crappy part.
Yeah. So one thing that Lori had a hard time with, as Kylie did, a police officer does not work traditional hours, which I did not. For the first part that we were married, I did. I was a detective at the time and I worked 4 days a week, Monday through Thursday. And I worked 10-hour shifts and I had weekends off other than when I was on call. And that changed with my department. After you've been a detective for so long, they recycle you out. And I went back to patrol. And so with patrol, I was subject to the bid, which meant my schedule now was no longer traditional hours. And that was really tough on her. And I can understand that.
Sure.
There's a reason that cops have a lot of divorces. And that's a big part of it is we live the Batman life, not the banker hours.
I didn't know that, by the way. I thought that once you made detective, that was like right? You'd made it. I didn't know you got rotated out.
Yeah, it depends on the agency. Larger agencies have that privilege because they just have enough positions and turnover. But with a mid-size agency like I work for, if you were to allow officers to remain indefinitely, people would never have a chance to ever move into a specialty.
Interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So when you got married to Lori, you were a detective.
Correct.
She was accustomed to close to banker hours.
Yep. Yep.
And all of a sudden,
things change.
You told her that was a possibility, but
yeah, it's not like it was a surprise where I came home one day and, hey, guess what, honey? She knew this was coming, but I think just the reality of living it was tough. And that also became a little, I think, triggering for her because with her first marriage, he'd be gone those hours of the evening, generally up to nefarious stuff, but it would be really tough on her when I was gone in the evening.
Yeah, I can totally see that because you bring those scars into your second marriage or third or fourth or fifth for that matter.
Yeah.
Divorce doesn't have to be complicated. Our Divorce.com's three-step procedure provides a simple and affordable process that you can follow at your own pace. Save thousands by visiting OurDivorce.com today.
Okay. Yeah. So she's understandably not happy or not coping well with your weird hours.
Yeah. And so, again, I wouldn't call it a problem with the marriage at all, but this leads to... we had also made some friends a few months before, and these friends that I'll just refer to as the couple, we hit it off with them. Like, we just become great friends with them, so much in common, so much to joke around and talk about. We have a great time when we're together. And so...
Sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she would a lot of times get the four little kids put down, or if my kids weren't here... She'd have hers put down. At the time, my oldest daughter was living with me full time. And so she'd go hang out with the couple, and not a problem at all. That helped alleviate maybe some of that stress that she was feeling from me being gone, and gave her almost kind of her own social life, because obviously she became much closer with them than I did because she was with them a lot. This is where things begin to get interesting.
I was just about to say, Mark, this just sounds like... On the one hand, this is, oh, it's great. She found a way to deal with your absence. It sounds great. But you know what? I've heard so many stories, both on and off this show, of, I met this really great couple. And anytime I hear that now, I think, dun, dun.
And so what I begin to notice, so now fast forward, we are 2019. We're late summer 2019, and she's getting ready to start the school year. She's a teacher. So she had spent a lot of the summer hanging out with them quite a bit because she wasn't in school. And I would begin to notice little things, but I never paid it mind at the time. Like we talk about on this show, you miss those red flags. We'd be sitting in bed and we'd be watching something or talking about something, both on our phones, and I'd lean over, hey Laurie, check this out, whatever, and I'd notice she'd immediately dark her screen. And I think at first I was able to be like, oh, it's because she's giving me her attention. That's kind of cool. I'd look at some funny meme or whatever the fuck I'm looking at, and she wants to give me her undivided attention, so she's going to dark her screen. That's nice of her. And I think deep down I knew, what's up with that? But that's how I played it off in my mind.
It's so funny that you should bring up the phone for the very first thing, because when Trinity, my second wife, after finding out about her first affair, my brain went back to say, what did I miss?
Yep.
And
sure enough,
her phone and the way she handled her phone, she'd darken the screen. She would hold it away from me. She would keep it in her pocket 100% of the time. It was never just sitting on the arm of the couch or on the counter in the kitchen.
Yep.
And I, again, didn't think anything of it until after.
Yeah,
I found out.
One of those, it's not a problem till it's a problem. And so I begin noticing that. So the school year starts. She, coming down the stairs one day, twists her ankle really bad and has a really bad sprain. And has that wrapped up for a while, starts doing physical therapy with it. But anyway, at the same time, I'm noticing the disconnect. Like, I am noticing there's a disconnect. Like, she just, she isn't mentally engaged with me. She isn't emotionally engaged with me. And I could sense it.
And how about sexually? I've got to ask because I like that.
Okay. It was, you're weird like that. But no, it's a great thing to ask. And it was funny. I forget whose interview. It was still great. And I forget his name where you did the interview with that. Even in the height of their divorce, the sex was still great. So that was still great. Didn't diminish at all. So
wow.
That probably helped mask my ability to really see everything, because I'm like, the sex is still great. Because with Kylie, if, like I said, that woman could go without anyways, but heavens forbid, if I looked at any porn, guarantee I'm going 6 months without.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause again, like I said before, cause that'll help.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Especially, yeah. So many smart ass comments, but I'll try to be nice. Cause like I said, we're not here to bash the Mormon church.
No, we are not.
Yeah, no. So anyway, yeah, I'm noticing the disconnect, and I begin to ask. And it's just little things. I'm like, hey, baby, are you okay? And she'd always just say, yeah, just my ankle really hurts. And then with that ankle sprain, it even hurt her back. And so that made sense. Okay, yeah, you're in a lot of pain that she's not used to. She's still relatively young and active. I mean, we're in our late 30s here, so it's not like she's used to dealing with this. So again, I ignore it, but I begin to sense more. And then I start getting to the, are we okay? I'm like, I'm sensing something's on here. And this is where, again, like a lot of the hurt comes in, because she would take it a step further and say, we're the best we've ever been.
Really?
Yeah. The flat out deceit here at this point. And so one night I'm at work, and she says, hey, I'm going to hang out with the couple, which, yeah, not a problem. I'm not fully suspicious about that yet, maybe a bit, but I haven't put everything together yet.
Yeah, you're feeling something's weird.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Right, but I couldn't say what it is, and it's only after the fact that we put that all together. But anyway, and she says to me, now they do live about a good 30, 40 minutes away from us, and she says, I'm going to spend the night up there. Now, we had no kids at the house that night. And I'm like, whoa, you're going to do what? She said, yeah, I'm just going to spend the night up there. We're going to have a little bit of wine. And she was much lighter with alcohol than I was, as far as two glasses of wine would definitely give her a good solid buzz. And
so hold on for a sec. Were you working that night?
Yeah, I was at work.
Okay. Yep. So it wasn't that she was like, hey, kids are gone. Yep. You stay here. I'm going up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm at work. So it's normal, but the only off thing is I'm going to spend the night up there. And it's one of those, everything in me is screaming at this point, something's up, say no to this, say something to this. And I kind of do the passive aggressive, look, baby, if you want to do that, but hey, I don't know. This is just kind of weird. I beat around the bush, but hoping that she'll pick up on that, which I'm sure she did, but she didn't care. And so
she had her plans, man.
She had her plans. And so she goes up there. She spends the night. I get home later in the night. I got off at 2:30 a.m. She texts me at 9 a.m., says, hey, I'm on my way home. And at this point, I'm pissed. I'm like, fuck that. I'm going to the gym. I don't even want to. If we talk right now, I'll get upset. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. So I go to the gym, and she's, I'll meet you at the gym. And I'm like, oh, great. And so she meets me at the gym, and she's super flirty when she gets to the gym. And so that puts me at ease to where I'm like, okay, she senses that maybe she crossed a line a little here. She senses I'm upset. And so she's putting me at ease. We're going to have a talk about this later, and everything's going to be just fine. We end up
Aren't we stupid?
Yeah. Right. It's like,
you're so dumb.
Yeah. It's like I'm setting up the bowling pins for her and just going, here you go, throw that ball. And we end up getting the kids later that day. We go do an activity with the kids. And then I start sensing the disconnect again. And it is heavy. And I'm like, what the hell? A couple hours ago, flirty and fun. And now what's this? And so when we get home, we get the kids kind of settled with dinner and watching a movie. We're up in our room, and this is where I'm like, okay, I'm just going to talk about it. And lessons that I did learn from my first divorce was when she's talking and kind of going off on her issues, shut the fuck up. Mm. So I made that issue of trying to argue with somebody when they're in an emotional state, and it just, yeah, doesn't go well, because that's the cop in me. The cop in me, we jump on things. But thankfully, I actually credit a lot of my training as a detective, where you learn to be calm and cool and keep it in your back pocket.
Yeah.
So anyway, I bring it up with her and I'm like, hey, that really kind of hurt me when you stayed up there last night. Can we talk about this? And boom, the tears come out and she just starts bawling. And I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm about to have my world rocked.
Yeah.
She doesn't talk about what I think she's going to talk about. She begins just going off on how she's never lived her own life. And understandably, she hasn't. She did the Mormon path when we were talking about checking the boxes. She went to BYU, Idaho, which is like Mecca of the Saudi Arabia of Mormonism.
It is.
For those who aren't familiar, BYU has a couple campus, three campuses. They have Provo, Utah, Hawaii, and Idaho. And the Idaho one is known as like ultra strict Mormonism.
Yeah. And Marriage Central.
Yes. Yes. And then she was married right out of BYU to her first husband, divorced her first husband, moved in with her mom. And then her and I got married. I see what she's saying here. And so she's really talking about that. And for the next probably half an hour, she goes on about how she's never been her own person. She's never lived her own life. She's done what she's told. She's followed this Mormon checklist and things that her and I have talked about over the past 3 years of our marriage. And she's just having a complete, she even said, midlife crisis, that just she is not her own person. And I'm listening and I'm letting her talk, but there is a $64,000 question that needs to be asked.
Right. Yeah. Why is this happening right now?
Yeah. And so I dip into that. I told her, hey, thank you for sharing that with me. I had no idea you're going through this. And in my mind, divorce isn't even aware on the radar. Even with what she's about to tell me, I'm like, we're going to get you some help, baby. This is a lot. I understand. I completely understand how you feel. And then I ask, I'm like, I do have to ask, is there something going on with you and the male part of the couple? And so she does a no, but. Okay. And so when she does the no, but, she then begins to go on about how he really understands her. He really gets her. And then that leads to they really understand her. They really get her. And finally, I just asked point blank. I'm just like, Lori, are you in love with him? And she's quiet. And not to go all detective here, but I call that a clue. Yeah.
You don't have to be Scooby-Doo to figure this out.
Yep. Shaggy? And she's just quiet. And I don't lose it. I don't lose it, because at this point in my mind, I'm like, she's very broken and I understand everything. And she's developed an emotional connection with the couple and she's developed some feelings for them. And we can work through this. I really believed in my heart of hearts we could work through this. And I'm like, okay, so well, what's going to happen now? She's like, I think I'm going to go to my mom's for a few days. And I'm like, hey, absolutely. And at this point, I'm literally just going to for emotionally shelf that she just told me she's emotionally in love with another man. Because my concern at this point is, let's get you help. Let's whatever you need to do. You need to go to your mom's, go to your mom's. So she packs up a bag and she goes to her mom's and brings her kids. That night, I reach out to a friend and I break down. I'm like, holy shit, this is what just happened. And of course, he's kind of like, dude, she's fucking cheating on you. I'm like, no, she's not cheating on me. And he's like, all right, be a dumbass, but she's fucking cheating on you. And I'm like, no, she's broken. I understand how she's connected. I don't think she's really in love with him. It's just all this other stuff. And I'm defending her. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to write out this heartfelt handwritten note. I'm not gonna type it. I'm gonna handwrite it, just saying, I love you, I support you, and I'm just gonna affirm how great of a person she is and how proud I am of her. So I write this up. It's like 2 a.m. at this point. Her mom only lives a mile from us. So I'm gonna drive over there and just put it on her windshield. I don't want to make her uncomfortable by knocking. I drive over to the house, her car ain't there.
Oh.
I know exactly where she is.
So you drive 30 minutes to the couple's house.
No, because I would have lost my shit.
Okay. Good. Yep. Good plan. Good thinking.
I call my buddy and he's go home.
Yeah.
Go home because you're going to do something stupid. And so I go home. I go to bed. It's the only time I've ever angry drank. I made sure during my entire Mormon deconstruction, I never drank alcohol when I was angry. I never wanted to associate alcohol with anger or depression. But I blacked the fuck out.
Wow.
Yeah. The next morning I wake up. It's a Saturday, or is it a Sunday? It's a weekend. I get a call from the female part of the couple. And she's, hey, Laurie's up here. I'm like, yeah, I know. She's like, well, how do you know? I'm like, because I went by the house, her mom's house, at 2 a.m. and she wasn't there. And so this opens up where the female couple here, her and I, start talking, and I tell her everything. And I find it really odd that when I tell her, my wife just told me she's in love with your husband, thinking that, okay, female and I are going to kind of team up and figure this out.
Yeah.
She's, oh, that's crazy. The fuck?
Yeah, that's not the response. Hey, there's a clue for you.
Yeah. Clues are mounting up here. So that conversation ends that night. But over the next, so Laurie now goes full radio silence with me. Just complete cutoff. The one and only conversation we ever had, and that was our last conversation, was that one in the bedroom that day where she broke down. And that wasn't even really a conversation.
Yeah.
So she goes full radio silence. And says,
I'm going to go stay with my mom. So that's the last conversation you guys had.
Last thing we ever had. So at this point, I'm forced to talk with the female of this couple here, but I don't even know what's about to happen. Now I'm still in my mind and she's acting to me like, okay, yeah, hey, just so you know, my husband doesn't feel that way and there's nothing going on there. I'm like, yeah, but, and I kind of call her out on that. I'm like, don't you think that's weird? And she makes hints that there's something going on with all of them.
And oh my.
And I want to be real careful here because anything I'm going to say about what they may have done sexually or whatever is pure speculation. It's best guess. I think it's a very well-educated guess, but I don't know. And I do want to be clear on that. I don't know if anything physically happened there. And I don't want to accuse anybody of an affair. And when I say affair, we all physical. Know that, yeah, that conjures up a very specific image as far as a physical affair. Because I was accused of that by Kylie, because looking at porn once in a while means you're having an affair in Mormonism.
Yep.
And so I don't want to throw that accusation around. So I don't know if anything physically happened here. She does make hints of perhaps Lori kissing her husband and her being there without saying that.
How do you hint about that without saying?
So what she got into here, and this will dip into a bit of Lori and I's sex life. We had a great sex life. And yeah, we'd always talk about our fantasies and things like that. Just like kinky talk, like any couple does. And
not any couple, some couple.
Yeah.
I wish I had been a part of any one of those. So.
In many healthy sexual relationships. Yes. Fantasies are talked about, sometimes acted upon, sometimes not, but you know, it's part of fun of it. And one of the fantasies that was brought up by Lori was being with another couple. And
oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. And so that's something that we fantasized about. And so the couple was aware of this because we had jokingly talked about it once with them, not hinting anything with them, but joking about, hey, we've talked about this. And they joke, yeah, we've talked about it too. So that door was open, so yes, to say.
It was.
And she's talked about just wanting to live all the things that she's always wanted to do. Okay. And this is when the female and I were kind of talking about the sex life. And so that was already being talked about. And she's like, she just wants to live she wants to live her authentic self. Okay. So she's making hints like that and that she's aware of it. And she's like, and we just want to support her. And that's where I feel that they were very aware of this. My own speculation, I think they were looking for a unicorn, which, boy, let me tell you what I learned about swinger culture, especially here in the state of Utah. And you can learn a lot on Reddit. Holy shit. I jumped onto Reddit and I discovered all kinds of swinger parties, swinger lifestyle in Utah. And it's a huge thing within active Mormons. I wouldn't say a huge thing. It's a thing with some active Mormons, this, which goes back to my whole high demand religions. It almost forces this duality where that's not authentic for anybody to live that high religious lifestyle. And it creates this alter ego. And so it's common here in Utah. And I've learned this over the years.
Yeah, those swinger parties end at 10 on Saturday, so they can get up early.
You got to get up for correlation meeting and turn the pineapple back up, right? And
that's right.
Jesus Christ. But yeah, so I definitely have the feeling that's going on. Now, as I'm having this feeling, the female won't fully admit to anything, and I'm now forced to talk to this woman because it's the only way I can communicate with Lori. Now, at this point, we're maybe a week into this charade, and the female still making it sound like I'm your advocate and I'm helping get Lori right so she could move back in. After about 2 weeks, I have a conversation with the female and she mentions something about, you better back off and give her space or this is going to end in a divorce. Like, back off and give her space. I haven't fucking talked to her in 2 weeks. What do you mean back off? I don't understand what you mean by that. I haven't said boo to her because, again, lessons learned from the first divorce, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
So I respected that. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's, I'm just saying she needs space. I'm like, she has space. I don't even know where she's living right now. And this is where she's like, she's staying up here with us. I'm like, Jesus Christ, of course she is. So maybe that's why she feels, and she doesn't feel she has space because you're always calling me. I'm like, yeah. Because I didn't know she's living in your fucking house.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Mark, this is nuts. And by the way, I'm going to interrupt the story for a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm laughing. For those who are only listening to this, I've been like covering my eyes and my head. And I mean, every single thing that you have told in this story is so reminiscent of my life 3 years ago right now.
Yeah.
I just can't even believe it.
It's uncanny.
It literally is. Because one of the things I almost threw up in my mouth when you said it, because what Trinity told me when she was having her emotional affair, no sexual that I know of, could be, but she was having her emotional affair with who I call Steve. She said, he just gets me. And you said that a minute ago, and I just was like, it's so gross. How stupid he gets me. Shut the fuck up. So that's the first thing. Then this, I need space. And then you have an ally in the female.
Yeah.
Steve was my ally. He and I would talk literally two or three times a week, and he would tell me how he's trying to help save my marriage.
Yeah, but you were suspicious of that, though, weren't you? You thought that
I was totally.
Him? Yeah.
In fact, you've binged all of the episodes. Did you listen to the recorded version?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's me and Steve, and he's, I'm rooting for you. I'm like, how about just stay the fuck out of my marriage?
Yeah.
That's how you can help.
Yeah. You want to help away. Me? Fuck off. Yeah. The next day, almost like she was giving me a heads up, the next day, I find out she has sold our vehicle. Big mistake, by the way, when you get married with somebody and they say, oh, let's put the vehicle as you or me, rather than you and me. Mm-hmm. Rather than Mark and Lori, it was Mark or Lori. So if it's or in a legal sense, that gives either party power to do what they will. It's almost like it's individually.
Right.
So she sells the vehicle and she filed for divorce. And I'm told by the female, I've got some papers to bring to you. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened?
That's how you found out you were getting a divorce?
That's how. She calls me the next day and she says, I need to tell you something. Okay. Lori is filed. Filed what? She's filed for divorce. What the fuck? Shit. Now, I know from experience with Kylie that even when things are stipulated, that's still a couple weeks just to go through all the paperwork and get finances and all that shit lined up. It was a little easier with Lori here because we rented and we didn't have kids together. Yeah, so it was a little easier in that regard, but she's already filed. What the? And I called the female out. I'm like, you don't do that overnight. When did you know about this?
Yeah.
No, she just told me today. I'm like, fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
When did you know about this? And then what she tells me is I've known for a week. I'm like, you fucking, and I didn't call her a bitch, but in my mind, I'm saying, I'm like, you fucking bitch. You've known for a week. You've been stringing me along knowing this has happened. And she's like, well, it's happening. And Lori wants to come down and get her stuff. And I'll give you the paperwork after when she's not here. I'm like, whatever. And at this point, I'm like, I'm going to lose my shit. Whatever. Tell her she has all day. I think we set like a Monday or Tuesday. I'll be at work. She has all day. Get her shit then. And so she does. She calls her brothers. What? Now, I have no idea what she has told her family because they went full radio silence on me as well. And I was great friends with her brothers. Her mom was awesome. They're all radio silence on me. And I'm like, getting blocked on Facebook and everything.
Trinity had two affairs and her mother told her brother. So Trinity's brother, her brother asked their mom, what happened? And her mom said, I can't tell you everything, but I'm just glad she made it out of there alive.
Oh my God. And they have to. You have to demonize the other person. It's
what
the only
the hell
way this works.
What did she tell these people? Yeah.
And so I have no idea to this day. One of the brothers who I was a little closer with, the Jack Mormon brother, he's the only one that remained friends with me on Facebook. I've never reached out to him. I've been tempted, but I'm so moved on at this point that there's no need. But anyway, so she comes, she gets all of the stuff that she wants out of the house. I give her full rein. I don't earmark anything. The only thing I ask her not to take is the piano that was given to us by her mom because her kids don't play and my daughters do. Yeah, so that's the only thing I ask. Other than that, I'm like, whatever. And so we then hash out this divorce. I'm given the papers. Now, here's where I do get where I fight back, I guess, a little. 16 years of law enforcement. Well, at the time, 13 years of law enforcement, especially as a detective, I know legal jargon.
Yeah.
And so I noticed that she had written in the initial information, the marriage is broken. Mark and Lori have tried to work things out and it's not. And they wish to be granted an arrest. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Work things out. No, not a goddamn thing has happened there. So I rewrite it. I'm like, if she wants this divorce, she's going to agree to this.
Yeah.
So this is the one thing where I'm able to have a little bit of power because she just wants this to be done with. And I'm like, we have rent on this home for 8 more months. We have an 8-month contract left on this home. She owes me half that money unless she's going to stipulate to giving the car that my daughter drives that we had paid off, signing that title over, and then I'll release her financially from any financial obligations. And I rewrite the paperwork that Lori is leaving the marriage on her own accord for her own personal matters. And I know that may sound petty, but hey, no, I want it on record that no, nothing was worked out.
She decided to end the marriage. End of story, period.
Yep. And so at this point, again, lessons, although the first one was stipulated, there were some things that I definitely got screwed on, but Kylie wasn't trying to screw me per se. It's just things that had we have got a lawyer, it would have been, had we have used our divorce.com, it would have been a lot easier. And so we were working on a level of ignorance, but there were some things that probably I conceded to with the first divorce that I should not have. So I get an attorney on this one just to make sure. We know this isn't going to go to court. It's still going to be stipulated, but I want to make sure I have everything right. And so they helped me draft that up and they're like, hey, your wording's perfect. We're just going to clean up a little bit of this. And they even said, legal jargon. I'm like, yeah, I've read so many legal documents and briefs over the years. I've testified in court on homicide trials, you name it, I've done it all. And so the divorce goes final within 30 days because we had no kids together. Generally here in Utah, there's at least a 90-day waiting period if you have kids, but without, you can get expedited to 30 days. 30 days later, our divorce is final, and I'm yet to ever hear boo from this lady.
So you've never heard from her since that night she left?
Never directly. So the only way she'd communicate at all was through a separate email that she set up. And that's the only communication we've had. One thing I did put into the papers is I made sure that it was well known that Lori's had her opportunity to take all of her stuff out of the house. Everything now remaining in the house and its curtilage is mine.
Yep.
And I wanted that in there. So it is mine. Now, one thing I did in the early days after her leaving, when I'd find things through the house, in the early days of being told the divorce is happening, when I'd find things in the house that I knew were hers, I would drive them over to her mom's, who lives a mile from me, and just leave them on the front porch. You know, no confrontation. I'm not trying to, and because I know Lori's bouncing between the couple's house and her mom's house. What she's told her mom, I have no idea. I don't know if she squared that peg. But, and I get a call from the female saying, stop doing that. I'm like, this isn't my shit. It's hers. I figured she'd want it. She doesn't want it. I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to throw it away if she doesn't want it. She's fine with that. Okay, just to be clear, I'm going to throw away anything that I find that's hers that I don't want. Yes, fine. Great. Because later on in the coming months, she would ask for things and I'd be like, I threw it away, which included a cookbook that was passed on to her from her mom, which, by the way, I had no idea that's what it was.
Nothing was vindictive. You
just- nothing was vindictive. I just threw it away. And she wanted some sleeping bags. And I even said to the female at that point, I'm like, I would sooner fucking burn those than give them to her. Hell no, she's not getting the sleeping bags because, of course, I kept those. I would also learn from the female in months later because the female would reach out to me periodically. And although she can go to hell, she is my only source to grab information on what happened. And so I would keep it amicable purely because I want to know what the fuck happened. And I remember it was about 5 months after the divorce. And I asked her, I'm like, all right, level with me. When did she know? And she goes, she knew about a year before she left that she was broken. She knew something was wrong, but she didn't know what. Talking about Lori. So the female's telling me about Lori. She knew that something was wrong with her, but she didn't know what. And so she didn't say anything to you. And I'm like, okay, I could somewhat, you're broken, but you don't know what. But I still feel that you should probably say to your partner, hey, something's wrong with me. I don't know what. I think I need some help.
Especially if you're asking and saying, I feel something's wrong. What can we do? And she's, oh, everything's fine.
So where I really got upset is, and then she says, but she knew she was going to leave you probably beginning of the school year 2019. I'm like, oh, about the time I sensed a disconnect and asked her point blank multiple times. So at that point, she's just flat out lying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so not only lying, like she's trying to deceive me. She's building an exit plan. She knew she was going to leave, which, by the way, Christmas of 2019, I used some inheritance from my grandpa passing. It was about $4,000 to take the whole family on a vacation. So she knew during that vacation that she was leaving me. She knew. She didn't know when, but she knew.
By the way, side note, Trinity left me December 26th.
Well, you don't want to ruin Christmas and all. Yeah, because that'll still make it a happy Christmas memory in your mind years later.
We spent Christmas Day packing her pods with decorations.
Right. Is that my nutcracker? Because I know you got one. So I would find all this in the months that would follow. And where the real hurtful thing was, where I really became angry, is became tax time. I do remember I said at one point to the female, hey, I need her tax information so we can file taxes. We had always broke even federally. I made a lot more than she did, but we'd always broke even filing joint. And the female had always told me, we'll get it to you. We'll get it to you. Then I get the, hey, by the way, she filed her taxes already. which anybody who knows anything with tax code knows that if one person files married filing separate, that means the other has to.
Yep.
All of my deductions have been set up for us filing joint with claiming at least four kids. Now I'm stuck filing, and when I file, I owe $4,500. And I found out she got a $1,500 return. And so I go to the female and I'm like, this is fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
She told me she was going to file a joint, and so she just felt that she needs to be on her own and do this on her own. I'm like, fuck that. This is cruelty at this point and unnecessary, which Lori and the female always made it very clear that Lori never blamed me for anything, that she recognizes this is her just falling apart. She never blamed me for anything. I'm like, then why the fuck is this happening? What's with the vindictiveness? And I said, fine, have her do an amended return with me. She can keep her $1,500 return. I'll pay that. So when the federal government says you owe us that money back, I'll pay it, because $1,500 is a lot less than $4,500. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't do it. She wouldn't do it. And what's the reason?
And
the female would just claim it's because she just has to go be independent. I'm like, fuck that. This is cruel at this point. You know what this is doing to me?
Just cost me $4,500. Thanks a lot.
Which, by the way, my bills just doubled because I'm now responsible for all the rent. And thankfully, good timing. My department had done significant raises, so I'm doing a lot better financially. But still, this is horrible. And that was probably the last of the communication. And I've never heard from her since, other than to ask for those two things, to which one of them I said, sorry, it got thrown out. And the other one I said, go to hell. You're not having the sleeping bags.
And that's fascinating.
Yeah. And
just, by the way, one more mirror point between our lives. The last communication I had with my ex was about taxes. We got audited. Our 2018 taxes were audited last year. So we had to communicate. I have not heard her voice in over 2 years.
Yeah.
But we communicated via text and email to get through the audit. But how fascinating.
Yeah. So immediately after that, I know not to date to get married, but still that muscle memory of I got to start dating.
Yeah.
But at this point, I'm fully out of Mormonism. And so I think I just wanted to have a slut phase. That lasted for probably a good year, where I was a serial dater and hookup culture, and I knew it was unhealthy. But part of me also kind of needed to purge that from my system, because I never did that in my 20s. I was married right off the mission and having kids. And so some of it was cathartic, but I knew long term it wasn't healthy. I also got immediate help and advice in the post life here. Get the help. Guys were a little worse at it. In those early days, I went to an Instacare because I was shaking. I almost passed out one day. The kids were really concerned. This is also where Kylie and I become really good friends. She was awesome. And when Kylie was such a help there, the old ex-wife Kylie disappeared. It wasn't even a person anymore. The new Kylie was this new person who was one of my best friends and my co-parent. And I loved this person to death as one of my best friends. Like, to this day, I still completely trust her with anything, and we can joke around. And it's almost, I know this is my ex-wife, but it isn't.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, family who was pretty harsh on me with the first divorce, they were awesome. They were awesome. I had an awesome support system. I really opened up. One night when I went into an Instacare, because I was in a dark place that day. This is hours after finding out about the divorce. I'm in a dark place. And you know how it is at Instacares. Let's get you triage. Let's get whatever you need and let's get you out. And I ended up finding this doctor a couple of years ago and said, you saved my life. Maybe literally that night. Busy Instacare, full, dozens of people in the waiting room. And that doctor stops everything and talks to me for an hour and a half, like a therapist, but, you know, just listens and says, hey, we're going to get you on some medication just to calm you down a little bit. I've never taken any kind of, but
get you over the hump.
get me over the hump. And it got me over the hump. I got into some great therapy. I got into a therapist who knew cops and talked cop. And that therapist dropped like 3 F-bombs after 5 minutes of talking to me. And I'm like, okay, here we go. I found my person. So good things happened really quick, but I did have my little hoe phase, which wasn't totally bad. I knew it was unhealthy, but there was a part of it that was cathartic. But then eventually I knew I can't do this. I'd go through periods where I want to date. I'm like, I don't need to do this.
Yeah, and that's where I am right now, by the way.
And I really, really found my peace.
Yeah,
I really did. And it was awesome. And I got to a point where, okay, I'll date. I was anti-marriage and still, I don't know where I am with that, but I wasn't anti-relationship. But I was very happy with who I was, what I was doing. Relationship with the kids was awesome. Relationship with Kylie's awesome. It's like I've reconnected with my family because there was a disconnect after the divorce with Kylie, even though I still talked with them. Yeah. Everything is going awesome there and I am doing great. I start dating more serious, but man, the lessons came through.
Good.
And I would date a couple girls and when I'd see the red flags, which weren't red flags as far as they're a toxic person, but just red flags in the sense that I know you and I aren't going to work. That, and I made sure I dated a lot and found out that I'm not interested in dating somebody with young kids. Not because that's an issue for them. Hands down, they're great mothers, but I'm done with that phase of my life. My youngest daughter right now is in middle school. I have 3 kids that are adults, one that's married. And so I learned that. I learned the most important lesson of all. I don't compare when I met a woman, I don't compare her to this woman had, this woman has this. I compared it to my peace. Does she add to my peace or does she ruin my peace? She's
competing
against my peace. And if she adds to my peace, we're going to roll with it. And if she doesn't, we're going to move on. And I never had a rough breakup. Really, I only had, I guess, 2 that were like girlfriends. Many, we kind of had that dating relationship, but nothing serious. And then 6 months ago, I met one that she's special. She's special.
She adds to your peace.
She adds to my peace in every way. And all of that craziness. And I'm really happy.
I'm so happy for you. Let me ask you a question about that then. You're still a cop.
Yes.
You still have shitty hours.
At the moment with my current assignment, no, but it'll come up again.
It'll come up again.
Because specialty assignments are 5 years with my department.
It's like being a bishop.
Oh my God. I've never drawn that correlation.
Okay. So how far into it are you?
So I'm currently a school resource officer at a high school in my city, which I really enjoy. And this was first year.
Oh, so you have 4 years left, give or take.
4 years left. This lady I'm dating definitely understands that. And because she's been through similar, she's worked those kind of hours. And yeah, as of now, not a problem. I don't think it will be, but I'm also not ignorant to, and neither is she. Neither of us have blinders on that. Well, everything's just going to be great. We know we've been through stuff and that's what makes it so special.
That's fantastic. And I'll tell you what, you didn't even say this, but one of our earlier episodes, Brilliant Wicked Evil with J.D. McCabe.
That's when a good one.
It really was. He's such a good guy. Yeah. I just talked to him last week, actually.
Yeah.
The advice that he gave was to basically create a list of must-haves. Or what is it? Yeah, must-haves in your next relationship. Yeah. And that hit me so hard. Like when you and I are done with this interview, I've got a whole list of things that I do while this is all still fresh on my mind.
Oh, nice.
But I skipped all of those things with his because that piece of advice hit me so hard that I sat and started writing my list. And I have and it's evolved since then. That was almost a year ago. And I have written that. I've written my list and it includes things. No young children. That was one of the things that you learn through those dating experiences.
Yes.
I did a whole series on TikTok about my crazy dating stories. And there was only one of them that I said was a crazy person. The rest of them were just crazy experiences.
Yeah.
Yep. And it was because I hadn't learned lessons about you don't wait an hour and a half if someone's late. You don't date somebody who has 7-year-old children. Yep. And I didn't learn those things. But that's how you learn, is you date these people and you go, oh shit, I don't want that in my life. And that gets added to your list.
Yeah.
So your advice that you just gave is probably that hit me as hard as the build a list. So I got to ask, what's your piece of advice? Did you just give it, or do you have something even better?
That's my big one. I heard this saying from somebody else. I can't claim it. Be slow to hire and quick to fire.
Absolutely. I have a friend who said that all the time, and it's so true.
Yeah. In other words, let these things develop naturally, let them develop in their own time. And when I say red flags, I think we all understand a red flag isn't, I like this and she likes that. I like comedies and she likes dramas. We're talking red flags, big things that you know are no-goes. And when you see them, you move on. It doesn't mean you have a horrible breakup. You just, this isn't right, and we'll move on. And I found that with most women, when I'd have the red flags, so would they. And they'd almost appreciate me being able to have that fortitude of saying, and that's why that's so great to speak up with that and say, hey, this is an issue for me, and I don't know if we can work it. And then I'd find her say, yeah, this is an issue for me too. And hey, I appreciate your honesty. I do too. I'm friends with most of these women that I've dated. We don't hang out or talk, but we're friends.
Yeah, Facebook friends or whatever.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep, exactly. The sleeping around wasn't good as far as it's not healthy. Like I said, there was a part of it that was cathartic, but that advice there of date, and it is important. Yes, you may find the one right off the bat, and I'm not asking you to walk away from one if you find it, but as you just alluded to, you're going to learn things new every time, and your list has evolved, as did mine. And that's where I eventually came to the ultimate piece of the piece, which is my piece that I've created is really powerful to me.
Yeah.
And does she add to it or does she not?
I think that is absolutely genius. And I'll just say one thing about that. If you haven't found your own piece, it's impossible for someone to add to it. And I will go one step further and say it's impossible to find your own piece quickly. It takes time.
It's a process.
And when I was getting divorced, I had so many friends say, wait a year. Don't go on a single date for a year. I mean, don't even date. And I thought, oh, you guys are idiots. I'm good. I'm over her. Everything's fine. Oh my gosh. I wish I had listened.
Yeah. And then you have you have that breakdown in the shower in the fetal position and find yourself eating pretzels and drinking beer.
Exactly. And it's that muscle memory. And by the way, anybody who's divorced knows, whether they admit it or not, but you know that you contributed to the shitty part of your marriage.
And 100%.
Whatever you did to contribute to that, you have muscle memory and you're still going to contribute that same thing until you figure that shit out within yourself. And I never did.
Yeah, it takes time. Like I said, where I own it with Kylie is I did change. And what I had to learn, because this is a problem with a lot of cops, which is a whole other issue, cops who have a very high suicide rate. And unfortunately, it's because so many of them try to create this split personality where I have work me and I have home me. And it's true. There's things I'm not going to talk about at home, but you are just one person. And you have to find a way to bring those together, find boundaries, but you cannot be a split personality. It doesn't work. One eventually takes over. And it took me years, all throughout Lori and all throughout the past 3 years, to find that person. And that's when the peace came. Be like, okay, I'm able to talk about things that happen at work in a good, healthy way. I don't just save it for my cop buddies. I have my cop buddies and there's things that we can talk about. But I also know I have to disconnect from that world and I have to have people outside of that. And it took years to find that balance. So spot on to what you just said. Take the time. You may think you know yourself. You will learn so much more as you give it time.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we're going to end it on that, Mark, because I'll tell you what, I have enjoyed this so much, and I appreciate your sharing your story.
Thank you. Like I said, I found my spirit animal, and it's helpful for me to share this still to this day. I'm able to comfortably talk about it, but every time I do, it's helpful, and I just hope it resonates with somebody.
I'm sure. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Seriously, that's some of the best advice we've ever heard on this show. It's all about finding your peace and not allowing others to take it from you or even disturb it. I'm so grateful that Mark agreed to share his story with us. I think I've found a friend for life. If you like today's show, please show it by giving us 5 stars on whatever app you're using right now. It really helps spread the word. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Have an amazing week. Bye.
Possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Divorce doesn't have to be complicated. Our Divorce.com's 3-step procedure provides a simple and affordable process that you can follow at your own pace. Save thousands by visiting ourdivorce.com today.